Here's the beginning of the show.
Do you want to take us in?
Wait, yeah, let me get my chair to the appropriate height that I feel confident with. Welcome, everybody, to the documentary show. I'm John Oldfield.
And I'm Keith Bonilla.
Today, we are discussing two films, as we do in every episode, except for the first couple. So, catch on, everybody. Let's figure it out. We've done the same thing for the past couple months here. Mine was a movie about magicians, not musicians, and yours was a movie about a crazy person.
Yes.
So what do you think? Where do you want to start?
On the last episode, we started...
Oh, we should probably tell them, like follow us and, like...
Oh, yeah, we should. Yeah.
Where to reach us.
We're doing well for a little while there.
Yeah. Follow us on all the social media outlets. Take it away, Keith.
We have... I have our email ready, which is docshowpod@gmail.com. Our Facebook is facebook.com/thedocumentaryshow. Our Twitter is DocShowPod, and we have a very happening Instagram with, I think we're way up there. I think we're up to like two pictures on there, and that is DocShowPod as well.
We should commit to posting more pictures. Like now, I think I should have the login. You should have the login. We should commit ourselves to like each of us post a picture like every other day. Like each of us are in charge of like an even or odd day of the month.
Okay, like a picture of what? Just anything?
Something relating to a documentary, podcast, or something like that. I think we should commit to that.
Okay.
So that people listening right now to this episode, when they click on Instagram documentary show, there's going to be like a slew of pictures to look at.
Okay. Do you want even odd days?
What day is tomorrow?
Cause I would like odd days.
Well, then you can do it tomorrow.
No, son of a. Okay. That's fine. I'm off tomorrow. So I have all day to figure this out.
You know what I mean? I think you could even log some stuff just so there is something to post. It doesn't have to be like a live, you walking down the street and a documentary appears.
Yeah. Which would be awesome.
No, I mean that there should be a documentary about that if it happens.
Okay. All right. So the DocShowPod, the hip new happening place on Instagram. And go to iTunes and leave us a review.
Gotta have that review. Gotta have that five star.
Do we have any more reviews other than that one guy?
I can try and find out, but I'm gonna guess no.
I'm working on finding it right now.
Okay, you look for it.
Let's start with your show, your documentary.
My documentary. Do you have all the things queued to where they need to be queued?
Nope.
Okay. I'll stretch one here. My documentary is found on Netflix where I watched it. You can also get it on Amazon Video for a couple bucks. It's called Magicians, Life in the Impossible. It's pretty new from 2016, the end of 2016, actually. It's runtime, about an hour and a half, which is always a plus for movies that I like to review for the show. Basically follows three magicians kind of in their life. Yeah.
All right, I got queued up here. I also want to apologize that I'm eating half of a sandwich because I'm starving. And I literally walked in, threw the sandwich together, and then we're doing the show. But hopefully by the end of this trailer I will have finished up with my mouth sounds.
All right.
Here is Magician's Life in the Impossible.
If something seems impossible, I want it to happen even more.
in my career.
I would do a show. People would say to me, oh, that's so great. So what do you do for a living? Oh, wow. Gut-wrenching.
It's a perfect magician house to pay for. I've got to concentrate on booking the gigs and paying the bills.
Thank you.
I love doing it, but it's exhausting.
There aren't that many female magicians.
A man does not like to be fooled by a woman.
I first came to Vegas. I decided one day you're going to work here. Here I am.
It was like Alice in Wonderland.
I know I can do even better, and that's what drives me. This year, I'd love to have my own TV show.
I have achieved everything I've ever set out to do.
I love you so much.
Sorry, I'm really stressed out.
We broke up because she had sex with my best friend.
What? No, you can't say that to them.
So we decided I would move out to a 300 square foot studio apartment. It's great. I love it.
Chris Angel's doing a new stunt. The press release sounded like my bed of death. I can't believe that it's really the same because he would have called me probably.
It goes not just on my nerves, it makes me a little stomach pain.
In my life, I've experienced a lot of ups and downs.
Just wanted to schedule that appointment for Cosmo. I can't do this, man.
I've had relationship problems.
I really liked the idea of being married.
I gotta take his wedding photos down.
Financial problems.
Well, I don't think success changes me. I hope not.
What? No, it's not.
Anything.
But I haven't felt that magic has ever let me down.
I've given up a normal life, a regular paycheck,
but every day I get to do what I love.
Magic can open up a door for people to possibilities, make them feel like there's more than what we think we know about everything. That's a rare feeling.
Magic is my home. That's never going to change.
Oh, I'm sorry. I accidentally played the entire movie. That was really long.
I was going to say studio audience, but the listeners won't hear your mouth sounds, but I'm pretty sure I heard some.
Yeah, well, as soon as I swallow this bit, the sandwich is gone.
There was no rush. You could have eaten the sandwich before.
It was a small sandwich.
Okay. Finger sandwich.
Yeah. Well, a little bit bigger. It was like a palm sandwich.
Like, do you think you could have done some kind of magic trick where you're like, look, I have a sandwich, and then somehow eaten it in one bite?
No.
Well,
but I maybe could have done a trick where I was like, is this your card in my sandwich? And then they would have been like, that's not my card. You didn't even ask me to pick a card.
That's actually not bad if you could somehow like at a restaurant do a trick and then the waiter brings them their card.
Well, I have a story somewhat related to that. Not like involving me, but.
Ooh, teaser. Okay.
So part of my thoughts on this movie may be influenced by listening to Penn Sunday School.
Okay. I don't listen to that.
With hosted by Penn Jillette.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Penn Sunday School because he's an atheist.
Right.
But he talks a bit about magic and stuff. And he was on the show Wahlburgers. Mark Wahlberg's. Well, he's involved, but then his brothers have a burger shop. And they're
burger joint, yeah.
Burger joint. And they're opening one in Pittsburgh, actually.
Oh, that's cool. That's
anyways,
wicked awesome.
So I think they were opening one in Vegas or something, and they were just like, okay, we'll have Penn and Teller there. And the bit was going to be Penn's there. He does a card trick for Mark Wahlberg. And has him pick a card, shows it to everybody, he doesn't see it. And then when they, Teller brings out a burger, and the card is in the burger.
Yeah, there you go.
And the way the trick was going to be done is they were going to get a second deck, and it was like special branded Wahlburger cards. They were like, okay, we'll get a second deck. I'll just force do a force and have him pick a certain card, and then we have the duplicate card pulled from the other deck. The teller is in the back, puts it in the sandwich, and then the trick is done. So, you do that.
Right.
And they go, well, we don't have a second deck of cards. Well, we need a second deck of cards. But we don't have a second deck of cards. Okay, so they're like, okay, what we're going to do is, Mark, you pick a card, take a look at your card, don't show anybody else. Show no one else. Put okay. the card back in the deck, teller's going to come out, and when you look at the card, say, that's my card. And Mark Wahlberg's like, got it. So they do the whole thing, because they just have to take a card out of the deck. So they do the whole thing. There's big applause. Mark Wahlberg looks really surprised. It all works. And then later on, Mark apparently went to Penn Jillette. It was just like, hey Penn, that wasn't my card. He's like, I know it wasn't your card. Yeah, no, but I'm saying like the trick didn't work. That wasn't my card. So.
So that ruined magic for you?
Well, no. I mean, if you... That's related to the... Having
the burger,
having a card in the sandwich and doing that trick, but that like the whole show involves like talking about magic and stuff, so you know a little bit. Like I'm looking at stuff a little bit differently, I think.
I don't know how many documentaries we've picked with magicians, right? We did Honest Liar.
Honest Liar. Which didn't have a whole lot of magic in it.
No, but it had a magician.
Mm-hmm.
What else was there? Was there something just recently?
There was the Ricky J.
Ricky J. Yeah. Okay. I have probably said it on both of those, but I'm a big fan of magicians. I like... I haven't listened to that Penn Jillette show, which I probably should, but I do like Penn and Teller, probably my favorite two magicians.
Yeah. Now... Penn doesn't talk a lot about magic always.
No.
But every once in a while there's a magic-related story in it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There's also a show with Penn and Teller called Penn and Teller Fool Us, which was a British show, and it's now an American show. I don't even know if it's still on the air, but it's really good. And it's kind of a behind-the-scenes thing. And actually, a lot of the magicians, or at least a couple of the magicians that were in... this documentary were on that show, which is kind of cool.
Tiny Pendragon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've only seen like one episode of Fool Us, and the Tiny Plunger was in there.
You're correct. Yeah, that's John Armstrong. But I don't know if we've actually talked about the documentary at all. It's not that interesting of a documentary.
Yeah, we both. It's interesting. But not that interesting.
Yeah. So there's three main characters, right? There's John Armstrong, the Tiny Plunger guy.
I thought there were four.
Who's the fourth one?
Well,
let me do my thing.
Okay.
There's John Armstrong, the Tiny Plunger guy, and then you tell me who I miss. There's Brian Gillis, who's kind of the more old school, like 90s magician, I guess. I don't know. He seems like he's kind of in his twilight. And then is it David Menken? Is he the, like the German? No. Oh, you're right. There is four. David Menken is,
Boom.
He's trying to be a David Blaine style, kind of TV magician.
Yeah.
And then I'm guessing it's Jan. No, that's not him either. That's his buddy. Who's the German guy?
Well, there's two German guys. Cause there are a couple.
Yeah. Well,
there's Jan and Frank, and I think Jan is the I think I wrote it down because I kept getting them confused, and I think I finally wrote it down, but maybe I didn't.
I think Jan is the guy, but on IMDb, when you pick him, you see a picture of his life partner.
No, Frank is the guy. Is it? I don't know.
I think it's not that.
All right. You keep going and I will figure this out.
Okay. And Jan is the other guy. He is the Chris Angel style magician. Very close to Chris Angel, you'll see in the documentary. But they each are kind of like at different levels of careers.
Well, they're also very different styles.
Yeah, they're not. I don't think they're necessarily trying to. It's not like they're on the same ladder, but they are at different rungs. Maybe I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, Jan is the Chris Angel guy.
Jan is the Chris Angel, and Frank is his life partner.
Yes.
Okay. And coach, and I don't know what else they are, but I'm certain there are other things.
Oh shit! I just there's an update on here. All right, you keep going with what you're going with.
Okay, I'm very curious. I was gonna say that the person that I found most interesting, because not only had interesting things happen to him, but I just liked him the most, was John Armstrong, the tiny plunger guy.
Yeah.
He was just very relatable. He was he went through a ton of stuff in the filming of this documentary, including getting married to a lady that they don't seem like they're getting on together very well. Then breaking up with that lady. He has a whole list of things that, like, he's like explaining to himself why he should be happy. He like lists all of his accomplishments that are all the things he ever wanted to do. But my favorite scene is when he goes to like a little magic expo that they put on at like a little magic shop or hobby shop or whatever it is. And he's like selling his tiny plunger trick to like wannabe small time magicians.
Yeah.
And I just found that like really, really cool. There's a little like fanboy magic kid that's there. That made John Armstrong the most compelling. I don't even know if it's compelling, because that Jan dude has some cool stuff too. But John was my favorite magician in this. Did you like favor anybody over anybody else?
Yeah, John was my favorite. I liked, my second favorite was Brian Gillis, except his whole situation seemed very weird.
It very weird.
He had a partner, and whose name I wrote down somewhere, but it's something weird like Sepavon or something. I wrote down Mrs. Autobahn is what I wrote down. It sounds like Mrs. Autobahn, but it's not that. They were boyfriend and girlfriend for 8 years. They broke up 7 years ago, but they still live together at the start of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Living together in a big house.
Yeah. They, like, he built. Basically made his own magic castle. And then somehow he gets kicked out.
Yeah, I don't know. Was she just better at managing money? Was she, like, his agent?
I don't know. I don't know how that happens.
But it seems like she is going to live in the house and he isn't.
That's exactly. That's what it seems like.
So that's weird. That did seem weird to me.
Something weird about that, because I also later on they show them doing a corporate event.
Yes.
And she screws up a trick. And it's one of those things where they're looking
she's doing like a mentalism trick.
Yeah, and it's like you look at this page in this book and like, okay, now like find this word and this thing and look at this number or whatever and tell me what the word is. So she is doing this mentalism thing and she said, I forget what the actual word was, jackhammer.
Yes, and she said smashing or something.
But she like totally like gives up and she's like, I think it's like smashing. I keep getting or she's like, I think it starts with an S or something. And he's like, no. And she goes, well, what's your word? And he said, jackhammer. And she goes, oh, I was getting smashing.
Yeah. But she should have sold that.
Yes, she totally.
I mean, that's a close.
It.
It's close.
Yeah. She should have just said her word. But then, like, I'm getting smashing, what's your word? And then quickly figured out some way to make a connection if you know.
Yeah, well, it's pretty easy. Jackhammer and smashing, I could make that connection.
Yeah, but the word also could have been, like, star. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it could have just been something.
Well, so this is the other thing I kept trying to like figure out tricks along the way. And that one, I think she just memorizes like where in the book they are. And somehow she has to figure out what page they open to, because they're supposed to open to find like a word with multiple syllables, like a long word.
Yeah.
So like at some point she's trying to figure out like where in the book they are, and the book must only have certain long words that they're expecting people to pick out.
Yeah.
Like if you open to the first third of the book, that has smashing, the middle half is jackhammer, you know, whatever. Either way, it didn't work, and Brian gets kind of pissed, and she's like, whatever, I have all the money.
Yeah, he gets super pissed. He's a real dick about it. But I would say he's my second favorite, because he's like the most genuine one.
Yeah.
And
he also does some conventions where he like teaches people magic and things like that.
Yeah. He's like teaching old people and stuff.
Yeah. And they're amazed by it, because they're probably like, they don't even remember their card.
Now, here's the thing. Yeah. I think that was my card. And then Jan and David are probably my two least favorite. Because they're just very, like, arrogant. And, like, I don't like the arrogant magicians.
No.
Who are basically just doing it. And you can tell they're like, I'm going to do it for money. Like, they have a little less love for, like, genuine love and appreciation of magic than the other two guys do.
Yeah, and the Jan guy is partnered up with Frank. Is that who we're going with, who he is?
Frank's his manager, yeah.
Okay, so the Jan guy's partnered up with Frank, and I don't think that he's necessarily doing Frank's magic tricks, but it does seem like Frank was a magician himself, and it seems like he's just kind of, like, over the hill, and he needs a younger person to be doing the magic tricks.
Yeah.
So I don't even feel like Jan is that connected to, like, I think he's just doing Frank's act.
I think he's just a performer, yeah. And here's the other thing about people like Jan, and I want to go back to Brian Gillis for a second after I make this comment. But Jan is doing the kind of magic that I'm not a fan of, and that was a question I had for you, is, like, what kind of magic do you prefer?
Not Jan.
Because Jan is doing, like, magic that's like on a grand scale and is like a spectacle, kind of like what Chris Angel does, and now definitely what David Blaine does, where he's like, I'm gonna like hang out in an ice cube for a week,
right?
And like, I don't like that, because I don't really see how it's magic. It's him escaping things, but it's not like, it's just a spectacle. It's not like a, oh my God, I can't, like, how do they do that?
Yeah, exactly. It's because this is the thing with magic for me is, at the end of the day, you know that it's a trick. Like, it's not like you're like, wow, is that dude really magic? So when they do something like so crazy, I'm just like, oh, that was like a really cool show. But like, if you can do something really quick that like, I just, you wouldn't expect it to happen, and it happened really quick and it was a little thing, that's way more amazing to me. Because they're both equally fake, so I would rather it be like a more realistic fake.
Yeah. Like, and there's certain things, and like, I think Penn and Teller do this before they do their magic bullet trick.
Yeah.
Where they come out and they say, what you are about to see is a trick. We are in absolutely no danger of getting shot. It is a trick and an illusion, and do not try this, because we have done all this stuff and we are in absolutely no danger of shooting each other.
Right.
Whereas David Blaine did a magic bullet catch and said that he hurt his throat or something doing it. And the following week on Penn Sunday School, Penn was like, that is irresponsible. And how dare he do that? Now, so I think we kind of like the same kind of magic.
But I will say that David Blaine's probably my second favorite magician.
I like, I'm impressed because by a lot of his close-up stuff.
Yeah, his street magic stuff is crazy good.
Yeah.
But even like on his most recent special, he did the thing where he would pre-swallow like frogs and things.
Yeah.
And then regurgitate them back up. That's still pretty cool.
That's cool, but I don't see that as like a magic trick.
It's not necessarily a magic trick, but it's still pretty cool.
It's cool to do, but also, like, you also wonder when they do these specials. Like, David Blaine did one where he did it in front of, like, in front of celebrities and stuff.
Harrison Ford, yeah.
And he did the Harrison Ford thing, and Harrison Ford was like, get the fuck out of my house. Because he had the card in, like, an orange or something sitting on the counter. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, that was so clearly, like, a place. You know, like, they totally planted that there. And, yeah. Like, I like it when it's more like spontaneous and you're like,
do you
like,
prefer just like a sleight of hand, like how did he get my watch off type of thing?
Kind of that, and like, which by the way, I totally want to learn how to do that. I totally want to buy that guy's CD.
You know what's so funny about the stealing the watch thing? You can watch magicians do it all day. And still I'm like, there's no way they could take my watch.
Yeah. You're just like, no.
Like, even if you watch them, I'm like, there's no chance in the world. But no. You could watch, like, if you just go on YouTube, you can watch them do it all day. You could spend all day watching people do it, but you still won't be convinced that it could happen to you.
Yeah.
I do prefer that style of magic. And one of the tricks that comes up into question in this movie with Jan and Chris Angel is the, like, falling swords trick.
Right. Well, hang on.
Okay.
Because I want to go back to Brian Gillis for a second. He talks to David Blaine. You know how Brian Gillis does he has a bunch of people stand up and goes, you stand up, and he flips the cards in front of the guy?
Yeah.
And then he shows them all he does it to a few different people, and he says, your card was this, your card was this, your card was this, your card was this. So, the other night, I'm trying to figure out what to watch while I'm eating dinner. My wife's already asleep. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to watch this David Blaine special on Netflix. And one of the first things he does is he turns to the camera and says, I'm going to flip these cards in front of you. Pick one. And then he does it and he goes, that was probably too fast. Let me do it again for you.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it. And I'm watching real closely and he lingers like an infinitesimal amount later. Like, just like such a small amount on the Queen of Spades.
Yeah.
And then he's just like, your card was the Queen of Spades. And it's like, boom. But then I was like, so that's got to be how Brian Gillis is doing his trick. But he has so much control over the deck and knows where each card is.
Yes.
That he knows exactly, as he's rifling through the deck, exactly which card everybody is seeing.
But can I say how I would do that trick?
How?
I would have each card that I want them to see on the bottom of the deck. And then before I show each person, I would take it from the bottom of the deck and put it to where in the deck I want to delay it. So then that's how I would know which card was going to be the next one delayed.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, he might do it like that.
I think I'm a magician, man.
You might be.
But
No, because all he has to do is probably slip it just somewhere in the deck.
Yeah, he just has to know where it is. He just has to know that it's there.
And then just has to know the spot to linger a second on it. Now.
And it will be the card that he just put in.
Yeah. So he knows exactly which card each person is getting.
Yeah.
You might be a magician.
Sorry, spoiler alert, guys.
All right, can we talk about Jan now?
Okay.
Because hang on, here's my thing for Jan. And I'm gonna say it now because I have a Jan update from Wednesday, March 11th, 2015. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. March 20th, 2016.
Okay, 1 year sooner.
Yeah. Strip illusionist Jan Rovin has been arrested by FBI agents on a felony child pornography charge.
That's not good.
The German-born Rovin, star of the new Illusions show at the Tropicana, was charged under his full name, Jan Rovin Fuchner. With one count of recipient or distribution of child pornography. Were found at his Las Vegas home. Graphic images of child pornography involving, quote, very young children were found at his Las Vegas home during a court-approved FBI search. They denied the allegations. Let me just see if there, because there was an update.
Jan, what are you doing?
But, like, how great would that be if you arrest him and then he's just, like, he just breaks out?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's impossible to handcuff him.
Yeah, they're just like, I can't do it with this guy.
But he just keeps giving you suggestions, and he's like, here, try those zip ties on the table.
Yeah, and they're just like, why are we still listening to this guy?
He's like, let's make it more difficult. I'm going to give a straight jacket.
Yeah, okay, let's, you know what? I have this, straight jacket, and I have the jaws of death. So suspend me between the jaws of death.
And he's like, set that timer. I only have 90 seconds to get out. And they're like, no, you don't get out.
Yeah, you have much longer than that. I'm just trying to see what his, what's this Wikipedia say? Oh, this is German Wikipedia. Okay, that doesn't help me at all. Okay, drill of death. Let's go there. Oh, this guy does not actually have an American Wikipedia page.
But he does have a German, which is weird.
Yeah. Do you have his name right there?
R-O-U-V-E-N.
Yeah, it does not seem like he has a an American Wikipedia page. I'm just trying to find out, like, if he was found guilty, if, you know.
I feel like it's hard to not be found guilty if they're like, it was there.
Or if they're going to be like, it was actually Frank's. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. We both share das Computer.
Das Computer. Ooh, okay, here it is. April 18th, 2017. So pretty... Wait, no, that's today. That's not the date of the thing.
I was going to say, holy cow, dude.
We're cutting edge on this. No, this was November 17th, 2016... A former Las Vegas Strip illusionist from Germany stopped his federal trial Thursday and pleaded guilty to charges that he acquired thousands of pornographic videos and images, including some depicting sex acts involving kindergarten-age boys. Under the plea deal, Jan, 39, will face at least 5 years in the U.S. prison. That seems like too short. And possibly as many as 30 years for his convictions on felony child pornography possession, receipt, and distribution charges. Anything else worth...
About his child porn case? I don't think so. I think we can leave it there.
Oh! Alter, his husband Frank, was named in a court document as an unindicted co-conspirator in the case. Authorities say he has returned to Germany.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. So, okay. So, yeah, I mean, there's some other stuff in there, but that's basically...
So, Jan doesn't seem to be making any big waves after his magician's Life in the Impossible appearance. He's not really taking that fame into a good direction.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he was the most successful out of the four magicians in this movie, though.
He was, but fame comes with a price, apparently. The case arose after he was identified in August 2014 by an undercover investigator in Buffalo, New York, as a collector of internet pornographic material who used internet, Skype, and email names including Lars45, LarsUSA22, and Lars Schmidt.
Oh, never mind. I was just going to say that's the connection to our documentaries, but it's not. That's the connection to my next pick documentary.
Okay.
So actually, let's just retract that and say no connection. Yeah. All right. I mean, are we still on the porn thing?
No, we're done with that. I'm good. I wanted to update people on it because it's a very big turn.
Well, let me, the first thing that you said way at the start of this was, did you call him a strip magician?
A strip illusionist. In the story, they call him that.
Does that mean, like, take your clothes off strip, or?
No, these articles are basically from Las Vegas.
So it's like the Las Vegas Strip.
Yeah, so it's the Las Vegas Strip. So they refer to it as the Strip. Because people in Las Vegas reading this paper know that it's called the Strip.
I assumed it was like a strip poker kind of thing.
No.
Like, every time I trick you guys, I'm going to take off an article of clothing.
Yeah. Wait, shouldn't we take off an article of clothing? No.
He's like, either way, I'm taking off an article of clothing.
You guys are too old to be naked. I'm 18. Too old.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying. Before we just tried to really dig a ditch for Jan, Yeah, I was going to say that his style of, like, the trick that, his big trick that there's a controversy between him and Chris Angel seems to have stolen his trick. That is my least favorite kind of magic.
Yeah. The table of death.
Because where the David Blaine things of, like, standing on a really tall pole or all these different dumb things, those aren't magic. They're just either stunts or... like tricks, like he's doing something differently to make it seem like something's happening, but that it's so unimpressive to me. The trick is the falling sword. So there's like five swords. He gets someone from the audience to mix up all the strings, so you don't know which string is attached to which sword, and you pull on them, and a sword falls and nearly impales him. And then he gets off the table, and there was a final sword. And if you would have pulled that string, boom, it would have stabbed him right in the heart. That's the dumbest trick of all time. It's not impressive, and it takes a really long time to do. Every part of that is not the type of magic I like.
Yeah. And then he replaces that trick with, like, the Jaws of Death trick or whatever.
Yeah, he has some guy make a big... But even that is just lame.
All he has to do is escape from the straitjacket.
So that's the trick. Just make that the trick, then.
Yeah.
Or do like some serious danger that the who's the guy from An Honest Liar? The amazing Randy.
Yeah.
He was in a straitjacket locked in like a milk crate or a milk carton thing.
Houdini's trick, yeah.
He was drowning. That's a trick. That's actual real danger.
Did you just say drowning?
He was drowning.
Okay.
But I think that those big tricks are not cool to me at all.
Yeah.
But then Chris Angel does seem to rip it off.
Oh no, he totally does.
So that's not cool.
Now here's the kind of big tricks that I do like.
Disappearing elephant.
Bigger, when David Copperfield made the Statue of Liberty disappear.
I know we've talked about this before, and I don't really know about that.
Well, it happened.
What did he build a giant mirror?
That's the thing. I don't know.
Or did the cameraman just move?
No, you can find the whole thing. Okay, hang on. I mean, obviously it's a visual thing, but I just want to make sure that it's on. It's got to be on YouTube.
Let's watch the 8-minute clip on YouTube and go, oh yeah.
Copperfield Statue of Liberty. All right. So basically it's just like, they explain it. They put up a big like...
Put down, and it was nothing there. I just couldn't believe it. No reaction. I was amazed.
And they showed on radar too something. Like, it's all a gimmick, I'm sure, but...
I would think. There's like a guy from the Navy, like, where'd it go?
He pulls it down, and it's gone.
It's impressive.
Oh, that's right. The other cool thing is they actually have a helicopter flying around up top. I forgot about that. And the helicopter is doing, like, a downward view of it. So you,
right.
Like, after it's obviously disappeared. So the helicopter can't see it either.
There's a cool trick of that Penn and Teller do, where they take a bunch of people and they have scuba gear and they dive underwater. And there's a giant submarine.
Okay.
And they put up a wall of bubbles, like, similar to, I'm sure, what he just did with, like, a curtain or something. They put up, like, a wall of bubbles so the scuba divers can't see the submarine. The bubbles die down, like, you know, sometime after that, and the submarine's gone. And then they cut away, and there's like two like giant military helicopters that just lifted it up and flew away. And it was pretty cool. But I don't think that's how they did the Statue of Liberty thing.
No.
What were we talking about with that? Big tricks? That's pretty much it.
That's the kind of big trick that we like.
I also have a note about the German guy's performance. It's a little too militaristic for me.
Yeah.
Like, there's a little bit too much marching.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think we should tone down that for sure.
Yeah, well, I think we should just turn, like, let's just cancel his show.
Let's just make sure there's, can I have a couple of young volunteers? Okay, shut it down.
Yeah. I do also like, they drive around in a Chrysler Sebring convertible, which is just, like, fitting such a gay stereotype. I think it's funny.
You knew they were homosexuals, correct?
Yeah, well, yeah, I was just like, oh, they must be gay. The one cool thing about, like, his story that I liked is they do, like, from a filmmaking perspective, is they do a little shot where he takes off his wedding ring and hangs it on a little screw in the dressing room and then comes back and puts it on because he doesn't want, like, the ladies that think he's so hot to know that he's married.
Tied out. Yeah, that's actually pretty good.
And because they do, like, just a shot of the ring hanging on there when he takes it off.
That's why, like, if any posts of us go up on Instagram, wedding ring off.
Yeah, yeah.
So that we get more likes.
We should probably cut this out of the episode, too.
Well, yeah, that's the magic part. Podcast magic. The only other things I have on the movie are just, like, a couple, like, scenes that I like. Two more little scenes that I liked. Was there any more plot stuff that you think we need to discuss?
I don't know. We didn't really talk about the guy.
We didn't really talk about the movie. It's basically, if you like magicians, this is a cool look into, like, some not super high level, like, David Copperfield size magicians.
Yeah, and like I said, it's...
And I enjoyed that kind of... I enjoyed those types of things enough that I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah. I wrote Tiny Plunger, Genius Idea.
Really cool. Now, do you know how they do that trick?
No, you know how?
I don't, but this is what I would
do. I was really expecting it. I got so excited. I was like, oh my God, he knows. He got the DVD. He knows.
This is what I would do. I would have some kind of, like, heavy card that matches the same as the other cards that you put in the deck, you know, somewhere in the top part of the deck. The plunger is a good enough plunger to pick up, like, enough cards, like, in just the way that cards, I don't know, somehow stick together, that it can lift everything up to that card.
Oh.
So as long as you put that card below the one you need to reveal, you're good.
Oh, okay.
Again, dude, I think I might be a magician.
You might be.
There's, like, a magician listening to this, and they're like, no, wrong.
Wrong. Or they're like, I've been doing it wrong this whole time.
I'm seeing slamming.
We didn't really talk about David Menken, the Hollywood guy. He's not, like...
I have one of my favorite scenes is his, though.
Which scene is that?
He's performing on a bachelorette cruise.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So he's performing on a bachelorette cruise, which you could, it's just like, if you're a stand-up comedian or something, it's just a tough room, right? Because they're drunk. They don't care too much about your magic. But he's there. He's doing his best. He's working the room.
And they want to see your tiny plunger.
Exactly. Show him the tiny plunger, dog. But he starts off by saying, ladies and gentlemen, and there's, like, one dude on this bachelorette thing.
Yes.
And he's not the husband. Like, he's one of the chicks dragged him along.
No, I think he's, like, a gay best friend.
Dude, I don't think so, man. He's not gay enough.
All right.
Like, you can just, I think he's there's a chick that also passes out and possibly pukes. I can't remember.
She definitely passes out, though.
I think he's her man.
I don't think so.
They're sitting together. I think they might even be holding hands.
See, I just assume that maybe I just assume that he was just, like, a gay friend or something.
You would assume, but I think if you watch him, which I was glued to him.
Yeah.
He's just not enjoying himself. anytime the dude makes a joke like, all right, ladies, yeah, you could just bring her up here. And then they all go, woo! He's like not into it. He's just having the worst time. And that was my favorite thing, was watching that guy.
I would go back and take another look, but I would have to find it in the movie, and I don't want to go through the movie again.
And if you disprove what I'm saying, it's going to be worse. So just live in that.
Okay. The one thing I will point out, though, is it's kind of funny because, correct me if I'm wrong, he was Asian, right?
Very Asian.
So he is the second Asian background guy to grab our attention, such as the most bored Asian ever in the clip that we had for Welcome to Leith when he does the DNA test.
Yeah.
On the show, and they just cut to the most bored Asian man you will ever see.
Maybe it might be the same guy.
It could be. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be wild.
That actually, so I like that scene, and I had a note about that, because they were just like, do the trick naked. And that made me think of the story in the Ricky Jay documentary where...
Oh, yeah.
Was it him that did the trick? Or
it was him.
And, like, he did a trick.
He did it to, like, his judo instructor.
Yeah, it was something about, like, he does a trick where they hand him, like...
a ripped up dollar bill or something?
No, I want to say they hand him, like, a one and, like, he folds it up and makes it into a 20 or something like that.
Okay, maybe.
Like, clearly he needs a second bill for this.
Exactly.
And they're just like, and they corner him in the,
like shower. A shower, locker room thing.
Yeah, in the locker rooms. And they're just like, they hand him a dollar and they're just like, do the trick. And he's like, oh,
just geez. Three naked guys standing there.
Yeah, he's just like, ah, oh, geez, I wish you hadn't asked me to do this. And then he does the trick.
But it's, and that is, we're talking about a different documentary now, but that's explained so well, where he's like talking about, he's like, oh, guys, I wish you wouldn't have done this. But while he's explaining that, he's like doing the trick.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. If you like, and what's the, do we know the name of that?
The All Ricky Jay. He has two documentaries that I've seen on that. Hang on.
I've only seen the one.
Oh, it's listing all of his actual movies that he's in.
I think he's in a lot. Was it with the one with the Deceptive Practice?
That sounds about right.
Deceptive Practices.
The Mysteries and Mentors of Ricky Jay.
Yeah, that's...
it's a lot about his mentors, too.
That's a much better documentary if you like magicians and stuff. So that was one of your favorite scenes. Did you have another favorite scene?
The only other... It's more of a favorite thing, and it's with John Armstrong, the kind of the bigger dude that it goes through, I think, a divorce, right?
Yep.
Which is sad. But you could tell his wife was kind of bitchy. Like, at the wedding, it wasn't right.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that? Like, she's, like, just not...
He was like, I love you so much. And she was like, sorry, I'm really nervous right now.
Yeah, so you could just... I mean, it wasn't right. But he has a comic book, and he goes to some comic cons, and it's called Smoke and Mirrors.
Yes, I want to see that. I want to read it.
I know. It looks really cool, and they do magic in it. Like, they do, like, some pick-a-card, like, things where when you turn the page, it reveals your card and things. That's cool. And I think it looked like a neat thing for him to be involved in, so I really dug that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I really like that.
I also like the groupies for Jan. Remember, there were like two overweight women that have like tattoos of his show.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like Master Illusion or whatever his thing is, and he's like, "That's not real." And they're like, "Oh, they're real."
And they're spectacular.
Yeah, I like that because he's gay, so that was fun. And they clearly want it on Jan.
Which is why he has to take the ring off.
Oh, because he's got to get that lady money.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So let's see. I think there are two other things that I want to mention briefly. Kill death. Oh, are dogs required to be a magician now?
Like having a couple dogs?
At least one dog. Everybody had a dog.
Except, and it can be any size, right? It can be a little dog or a big dog.
Yeah, except I think John Armstrong. I think he's the only one that did not have a dog.
Yeah, well, hey, maybe that's what keeps you in a relationship.
No, because Brian Gillies had two dogs, and he was in a weird relationship.
Oh, yeah. I like that they heard it in the trailer, but it goes, he says something about, like, well, why did you guys break up? He's like, well, you slept with my best friend. And she's like, you can't say that. We just stopped dating each other.
And you're just like, something happened there.
Well, I was like, well, you know, you don't get the final cut of this strange woman. They're going to include that. And they did.
I did not like her.
No.
Because of the second thing that I want to bring up. She's talking about how there's a lack of female magicians.
I know. We're saying musicians, comedians, everything wrong.
Magicians. Well, if you think about it, magicians do have to kind of be comedians.
It's true.
And sometimes musicians. So, but she's just like, I don't think men like being fooled by a woman. And I was like, I don't think that's it at all. My thinking is, it's harder to distract the audience, because if you're a female magician, you have
your your assistant has to be totally naked.
Yeah, like you have to. It's so hard because basically, if you're a female magician and you want to be able to take the attention off of yourself, you need to dress in a way to basically dress like a man, but. Right. That doesn't really, like, work.
No. Because I actually, when I heard that point where she's like, men don't like to be tricked by women, I was like, I agreed with her, and I was like, oh, that makes sense. But now that you said it doesn't make sense, and I think about it for more than, like, the passing second, I don't know what my reasoning, or what I think the reasoning is.
I mean, I think that might be part of it. That could very well be part of it. I don't think that is necessarily the justification across the board, though. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you don't want to draw attention to yourself. So, because regardless, if you're a male magician, John, mm-hmm. let's say you actually are a magician.
Okay, let's pretend and say it.
You need to distract the audience at times.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you get a couple lovely female assistants, because they're always female assistants.
I sure do.
So you get a couple lovely female assistants.
A couple now, young assistants.
Of legal age.
Yeah, not too young.
Who are there to distract the audience away from what you're doing. And even if they are hotter women than you, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They're hotter than you.
Right.
And men and women will be distracted by them.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Now, let's say you're a female magician. How do you pick your assistants then? Because if you pick attractive male assistants, even if they're attractive, more attractive than you, then they'll maybe take away the gaze of the women, and for a split second take away the gaze of some men, but other men will be like, no, I can't look at that, and then they'll be locked on to you.
You always have to worry about the gaze.
And if you're a very attractive female, then you got to try and find assistants that are hotter than you. And then it's a whole thing. Like, do you want assistants that are hotter than you if you're using female assistants and you're a female magician? Because you need somebody to take that eye off of you on occasion so you can do whatever you have to do.
But don't you think that they should be able to somehow make that happen?
Who make that happen?
The magician should be able, I mean, I don't think that it's like, when I think of like a good magician, I'm like, he's so good. He has the hottest assistants.
Well, you're not supposed to really notice the assistants, but they are supposed to be hot enough or attractive enough or whatever enough to take your attention away.
Just not a man. Just don't be a man and you got the job.
I mean, they could be meant too, but like at times you just need that thing. And I think it's harder, especially if you're an attractive female magician, to get everybody's attention away from you so that you can do whatever you need to do to complete the trick.
See, I think it's just a numbers game. I think it's the same reason why there are less female heavy metal musicians, because heavy metal music is not a thing that women like. And I think magic, there are less women are not as into magic as guys.
Yeah. But I think it's harder. What I'm saying is I think it's harder to become a bigger name in magic because it's harder to put an act together with a female as the center and be able to do tricks that where you need the attention taken away from you.
Right. But, and I agree with that. But what I'm saying is if there's, let's say there's 20 musicians, 20 magicians that you could rattle off their names right now. And you're like, they're all guys. Of musicians, God damn it. There's probably only 2% of magicians that are women anyways. So it's going to be hard for them to make it into that top 20 no matter what.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No,
so,
you're...
So I think it's a numbers game more than anything else. I agree with the reasons why it's hard for one that isn't that 2%. But I think if you're trying to get a successful woman magician, you need to have a lot more shitty women magicians.
Right. I think the reasoning that there are less female magicians has less to do with men not liking being fooled by a woman than anything else.
Yeah, I agree. She's like, an idiot.
Like, how great would it be if, like, you were just sitting in a bar and a super hot girl came up to you and was like, do you want to see a magic trick? And you were like, no, that's okay. I'm married. And you were just like, see the ring? And then you're like, oh, no, I left it on the nail in my dressing room. No, but she was like, no, I'll show you a trick. And then she does, like, this great magic trick. And you're like, wow, okay, that's amazing. Like,
also, I feel, and whenever it's like a TV show, people obviously know that there's going to be a magician walking around or something. But I feel like if you just take a general unknown male magician and have him walk around the boardwalk in, you know, New Jersey or something, and he goes like, hey, do you want to see a magic trick? A lot of people are going to say no. I feel like if it's an attractive woman, you'll get a lot more yeses.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean,
like, how many people you walk up, hey, do you want to see a magic trick? No. Okay.
Hang on. Can they see the cameras?
I don't know. That's what I mean. That's why I don't know how it's beneficial, but just as a music, God, we can't say this. We got to get done with this documentary.
Okay.
Female magician, magic person, I think it would be easier to like get an audience to watch you.
Yeah. But it would be harder for them to take their eyes off of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know, but I don't think that's the issue with magic. Like, you can really watch Penn do a card trick and you won't catch him.
That's true.
And a lot of times if he wants you to think that you caught him doing something, he like does something on purpose. Like,
that's true.
If you're good enough, you're good.
All right, fair point. I'm just saying, I think that has something to do with it, too.
I agree. Okay. I understand what you're saying. It's one less tool that they can use.
Yes. Yes, that is an excellent way of putting it. Okay. Are we done with musicians, and comedians?
That's all. That'd be an awesome show. I'd watch that on Netflix. That's all I pretty much have. I do want to check out that comic book, and I definitely want to figure out a way to make that happen.
Of checking out the comic book?
Yeah, Smoke and Mirrors by John Armstrong.
It's probably on Amazon.
I know. I think I might seek it out. Maybe if I get that, posting that on Instagram.
Okay.
That'd be a good one.
And you can share your experience with us.
Yeah, but I won't spoil any of the tricks like I have for all of these, because I definitely know how they're all done.
Well, you know how some of them might be done.
I know how I would do.
Which might not be the right way.
I also know how I do the sword trick, but it's more of an engineering thing than a magic trick, so it's not worth explaining.
Yeah, that's just an engineering trick.
Right.
Like, that's just not hooking ropes up and just having everything remote controlled.
Well, there's that. That's the easy way. That's not my 19th century trick the way I would do it.
Oh, yeah, 19th century trick.
Yeah, because you don't want to just be reliant on remote controls. What if an EMP goes off? You still want to be able to do your show.
I think if an EMP goes off, the finishing the show is the least of your problems.
Yeah, because of the lights.
Yeah.
And because of the Terrys.
And because of the what?
The Terrys.
The Terrys? Oh, you mean like terrorists?
Them terrorists, yeah, man.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's that.
So how would you do it?
Oh, I don't know. I was trying to like figure out this like little like
You just said I figured out this is how I would do
like,
it.
I don't know exactly what I would be, but it would be this thing where all the ropes are hooked up to the same like release and just the swords are dropping in a certain order. So like all of the things, and no matter which one you pull, it just it knocks the release down to the next peg.
Oh.
Like, you know what I mean? So everyone you pull is releasing it, but the swords are going to release in the same order no matter what.
Okay.
That's how I do it.
That's, you know, that's pretty good. I think you're a magician.
I really do like watching magic. But I don't really, you know, that was going to be one of my things this year because, like a couple years ago, I taught myself to whistle and then, like, I did that. I did the like the rapping thing this year for a while, but I kind of got away from that where I was like rapping in the car.
Right.
I was going to try and do the like the little just like the disappearing card trick where it's like behind your hand and then you like whip it out like that thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was going to be my like thing that I would work on. And then at the end of this year, I'd be really good at it. But I have no desire to do magic. I'm a magic enthusiast.
So you have no desire to actually perform magic. You just know how everything's done.
I just like seeing it, yeah. I think I would be really good at producing a magic documentary, but not starring in it.
Okay.
I'm like the Frank to Jan's Jan.
You don't want to be the Frank to Jan's Jan. Trust me, that doesn't end well for Frank either.
No, it's not good.
All right. That's it
for magician. Okay, we didn't talk about the directors. It's Christopher Baden and Marcy Hume. I don't think they've really done many other large scale things. Hood, Coast to Coast, Uncharted. I haven't heard of any of those things, but they seem to be working together on a lot of stuff.
Jeez, all these trailers are really long for this next one. Are we going to the next one then?
Yeah, that's all I got for magicians. I'm sure that there's a million ways to connect these two documentaries, and we'll figure one out before the end here.
Challenge accepted.
Hey, how's the old microphone sounding?
Good. We're at an hour, and you're doing great.
I'll be honest. I don't think it has anything to do with the microphone, even though this is a much better microphone. I think it's the wired internet is helping.
Hmm. Okay. Mine is Curse of the Man Who Sees UFOs, directed by Justin Garr.
Double R's for directors. How about that? Or double A's.
Double A's? Oh, yeah, we could. I mean, that's weak. I feel like we could do better.
We could do way better. Let's save it.
But let me just play the trailer.
This is where I come and do most of my thinking so that I don't have to take Prozac or whatever else the fuck it is they want to give me. Because they think I'm fucking crazy because I believe in fucking something that, you know, everybody says is bullshit, but
it's real.
Holy shit! They're right here! They're right here! They're here! They're here above the bay!
Look at this gizmo.
Okay, these are definitely fucking weird as fuck.
What the fuck? It's going up behind the wire.
Right over Monterey, motherfuckers.
Dude, look at this fucking freak show thing.
What the fuck?
That's no fucking plane.
And I'm driving like this, and right there is this red orb. It shuts my camera off. My bowels start jangling around just fiercely. So I ran down here really fast. And I just... Right? And I'm like, you just made me shit my pants. Right? And it does the thing again. We're turned around. He's running down the golf course on fire, which is where I was standing when the big golden orb was there.
Tonight, and it's gaining a lot of attention.
Well, this crop circle roughly covers around an acre worth of land.
An acre. Grass, as you can see over here in this side, it's laying down without actually being broken.
If anybody doesn't believe now that UFOs are in Monterey, well, there they are, communicating on the ground.
Steve! Lawrence! Look! Come here! Quick! Come here! Do you see them? Right here! Film it with your phone! Come here!
I believe it's a thing that's been handed to me. You know, here I am, fucking crazy motherfucking Christo, with every fucking problem in the fucking world. I get to see that. I get to see it more often than most people will ever see it once in their whole fucking life. And that's telling me that this is something I've got to share.
Here we are filming UFOs in the daytime. Pretty fucking bitching.
Yeah, right.
There you go.
So it is the story of a man named Christo Rapolo.
Mm-hmm.
Who sees UFOs.
Yep, Monterey, California.
And he sees them a lot.
Like daily, every day. Day and night.
Yeah. So... I don't even know where to really kind of start with this, because it doesn't quite have a structure the way that the last one did.
No, it's also produced, one of the producers is Christo.
Mm.
So it's almost like it's like a self-release, like he's, it's not like they're going to do something that makes him look like so crazy and like, look how crazy, he's a hoarder too and all these other weird things. Like, I don't think he's a hoarder. I made that up. But like, they're not like, this isn't like an attack piece or something where they're trying to see how crazy this person is. It's kind of like his own release.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So like, I feel like that needs to like be mentioned, because I think it skews how the end result comes out.
Yeah. So the story that's in the trailer about the red orb and how he takes crap on a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
Is basically how the movie opens.
Which is awesome.
And he does a lot of running around. And have you ever seen the movie Clue?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know at the end where he's like, one of the ways where they're just like, he did this, and then he did this, and yes. Then he ran down the hall, and then they all run? Like, that's what I thought of as Christo was just like, and then I ran this way, and then I took a shit, and then I went this way, and I ran down here.
He does that sound effect too, which is awesome.
Yeah. My next note, I'm just laughing at, literally just says flying Christmas tree, which is what he calls it. Looks like a weenus is my next note.
is that your note or his note?
No, that's my note.
Okay.
So basically, I guess the director gets involved because they're looking for somebody to verify his video, or like who can edit his video together into something.
Right, because he's, like you said, he's getting video evidence every day. So there's a ton of video to come through.
He's constantly filming stuff. And he's constantly seeing UFO. He says Monterey is a hot spot for it.
But now, what do you think about that? Do you think that Monterey is a hotspot for that? Like, do you think that seeing UFOs every day is beneficial evidence or detrimental? Because I feel like it's like UFOs are such a rare thing to see. I say they're a rare thing to see. Seeing a UFO, I would think, would be a rare thing to see. So seeing them every day makes me just think, oh, it must be something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but they're different shapes and different things. And he has names for every different kind of version.
Yeah, but there's names for different versions of planes, too.
Yeah, but like... So, I mean, it could be something in the same class, but it's... If you were seeing the same thing every day, then you're like, okay, there has to be an explanation for it. And if you're seeing UFOs, like true UFOs, unidentified flying objects, then you're like, okay, there's got to be an explanation for this, but why are they all so different?
Yeah, I mean, they're not wildly different.
And I want to know what his theory is on, like, why there are different ones, because he does have different names for them.
There's
the flying Christmas tree. There's the Stinkleberry.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is the one that made him crap his pants. the Woo-Woos and Eggmans.
Yes.
I think there's a couple other names. Jellyfish is one of them. And here's my note. Eggman, Beastie Boys fan, ?
Is that a Beastie Boys thing?
Yeah. There's a song called The Eggman.
It's a Beatles song, too.
No, that's Walrus.
Yeah, but they say I am the Eggman.
Yeah, but there's an actual Beastie Boys song called Eggman. Here.
If you're one of the 55 million Americans...
That's an ad.
Listen, all of y'all, I'm an Eggman.
Nope. There we go. I'll probably cut this down. I looked out the window, seeing this bull head. Ran to the fridge and pulled out an egg. Smoked on my skull, he had no hair. On that shot, he was crying out hair. Saw the convertible driving by. Loaded up the slingshot, let one fly. He went for his divine, he didn't have one. Put him in check, wreck, my head gun. Hey, a symbol of light. But once the doctor pulls out to white. I pulled out the jammy, thought it was a joke. The trigger, I pulled, baby, yo. Reached in his pocket, took all his cash. Left my man. All right, that's not bad.
That's a good song.
Yeah, no, that's a really good song. It's off Paul's Boutique.
That's a really good song, and I also should have used that for the documentary song, because that's, like, really good.
like the intro?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we should have.
And it sounded like a thing that would be in an intro.
Because, the opening part is sampled from Pusher Man, I think.
Pusher Man. Makes sense.
That
sounds like...
So basically, I get a few minutes in. He talks about chemtrails briefly. He loves the F word, and he's just a weird dude.
Yeah, he does swear a lot, which is better than the evidence. I'm not a big UFO fan, but the evidence that he presents is only as good as other UFO evidence. Like, it's just dots in the sky moving in weird ways. So the only thing that makes it more intriguing is his commentary, and his commentary is really good, and he swears a whole lot.
Yeah. He seems like a conspiracy guy. And wait, I have a note here that says this could be John in 50 years.
I hope.
he's found other guys, like Dennis Deacon, who has pictures of flying pizza.
And you can ask, you can hear it in the trailer where he's going, Dennis, come here,
film it with your camera. Which also, I think during that scene I wrote this note, the Californian holy shit Jay guy.
Oh no, you're right,
Jay. Dennis, dude, we are
Dennis, get out here, bro.
Bro, we're gonna see some shit we ain't never seen before. What is that, a plane? That isn't a plane.
Dude, call the aquarium or something.
Call the FAA or something, kid.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
We should. You'd need to edit together a battle between those two.
Yeah. Holy shit, Jay. Fuck, it's spinning. They're talking to each other. We have been on season I should.
Awesome.
Or I'll just put Jay over UFO footage.
Try, yeah, that would work fine. Yeah. I bet no one, you could upload it to YouTube and people would think it was legit.
Yeah. I also wrote, these guys seem like there's a chance they did a lot of drugs back in the day.
I think you are spot on with that one.
Yeah. Because the one point he comes in and he goes, my buddy just texted me about this Malaysian airline. Did you hear about this? And then he's like, so what I do is I go on and I do my research. And he's like looking at YouTube about this.
Right.
Let's see. Dennis doesn't seem to think it's aliens. He's like, it might be anything. It's definitely a UFO since it's unidentified.
It's definitely unidentified. I'll give him that.
Yeah. And then really, after a little while, it stops really being about that UFO thing. I feel like the first, like, 20 minutes, half hour maybe, is him and UFOs. And then after that, it basically just becomes about him. And it kind of starts to turn when there's the crop circle. And he's like, guys, I told you it's a crop circle. It looks like a lens, like a sensor in my camera. Yeah. So they know we're filming.
Right.
And then they, like, he talks about that for a little while, and then they go on. And then they start talking about a little bit more about him. And then turns out the crop circle was a big hoax.
Now, does he believe it's a hoax, or does he think that that's a cover-up? Because it sounds like, I think at first he thinks it's a cover-up, but then he's cool with it.
Yeah, I think you're right. But when they say it was man-made, he kind of becomes unhinged and says that it's bullshit. And then later on it comes back up and they're just like,
no, it's man-made.
Yeah, he's just like, whatever. So one thing I had about crop circles that I wrote down, not related directly to this.
Sure.
But I was like, why are there crop circles? Because aliens have interstellar travel. So why are they communicating through the crops, especially since he says that
they can make them shit your pants.
Yeah, that they're like dancing and communicating with each other.
Right.
So then I was like, well, maybe crop circles are actually a message that we're meant to decode. The aliens make this crop circle, and if we can decode the message, then the aliens are like, they are worthy of meeting us.
Okay.
So it's almost like in Star Trek, The First Contact, where like, or the basically the Prime Directive, like they don't want to contact a race of people that, even though they break it all the time, they don't want to contact a race of people that don't have warp capabilities.
Right.
So maybe the aliens are just like, there's a federation of planets out there that are just like, we're going to leave these crop circles, and if people can decode it and figure out what it means, then they can meet us.
Like, if that, instead of being a sensor for a camera, was like the like ingredients of a warp drive, and we saw that and we were like, oh, warp drive, then they'd be like, these people, we can hang with them.
Or even if it was just like some kind of weird message that you needed some like next level math that hasn't been invented yet, that just said like, welcome to the universe, and we're just like, and we're broadcasting like, scientists decode crop circle in Missouri that says welcome to the universe, and then the aliens were like, they get it. Like, even if some as dumb as that, which,
yeah, probably, that makes sense,
which it hopefully wouldn't be, but like, it might be. Then we'd be like, oh, okay. And that, you know, maybe. But it's probably not that. They're probably all fake.
Right.
So it talks a lot about him, and that's kind of the draw of the documentary.
Yeah, he's engaging.
he's a weird dude. I think I might have said that before. He's just a weird dude, but everybody seems to really like him. And I think if we met him, we'd be like, he's a weird dude, but he's just a nice guy.
Yeah. If he came into your place of business, you'd be into him.
Hmm?
If he came into your work, he'd be a good regular.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing, though. I also noted, I feel like every conversation he has with strangers on the street ends with, do you believe in UFOs? Have you seen one?
He gives the one dude, a homeless guy or something, a couple bucks. And he's like, hey, have you ever seen any UFOs around here? And I don't know what the guy says, but then he's like, keep looking up, man. They're out there.
It's a hot spot. Have a great day. Yeah, so he's like, it's a hot spot. Bless you, man. Have a good one. And then, like, yeah, and he meets some woman on the beach, and they're just kind of talking, and he's like, UFOs. And he's like, she did not like that. But this guy has sushi named after him.
Yes. Which is cool.
Yeah. He makes a living, I guess, doing sound engineering and design and stuff and special effects. Yeah.
Now, his Wikipedia is not very impressive. There's only this movie and one other thing, but I think he's probably doing maybe some smaller stuff. Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm.
He did the special effects for the 2015 Diablo, which is Scott Eastwood was in that.
Oh, okay.
I don't know any more than that, but he's doing things in Hollywood, but in my mind, he's doing more like Craigslist level freelance stuff.
Yeah, he's probably, I would imagine, a step above that, but probably like a lot of B movies and stuff, like a lot of like Asylum Pictures and stuff. Mm. I imagine he probably works on.
Okay, he does do a lot of music making with his setup.
Yeah, yeah, he has a lot of setup and stuff with that, which is what you hear in the trailers, him messing around with a piano. Like part of a piano with the strings and stuff. And he's like plucking them to try and get different sounds. And then he alternates that and stuff. Here's where it gets really interesting is everything that happens with his father, his brother, and his mother. Like the idea that I get from this movie is that he was always going to work in movies. He was always just kind of a weird guy and a weird kid.
Mm-hmm.
And had these like fantasies and lived in this fantasy and like had these dreams and these fantasy ideas and everything. And then I think when some of this other stuff happened, he just kind of broke. So then he just fixated on this stuff. Because there's a thing in there where he was like, he was super into sci-fi movies and stuff, but he... When all this stuff happened to him, he just kind of fixated on that world, and that kind of gave him a place to put his energy into instead of dwelling on all the terrible stuff that happened to him. Because it's real messed up what happened to him.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, well, I was going to say just going back to more of the music parts like that. Do you know that what was the name of the woman?
Janelle.
Janelle ends up becoming like his new fixation for a while that he's somehow like OCD about, or I don't know if it's not OCD, but there's he's very much attached to that person.
Well, you're talking about the woman that was his fiance or somebody else?
No, her.
Oh yeah, because he has stuff. Somebody like did a drawing or an etching or something, and he has that done into like his equipment and stuff too, right? That's what you're talking about, yeah.
But yeah, and then there's like a wood cutting or something that's like hanging on the wall, and he's like, she's always watching me when I make my music.
Well, they were very close. You get that part of it, and that was his fiance. So, going back, he was super close with his dad, and his dad was probably his father and his grandparents were probably the people that he was closest with, Because I guess they, I'm guessing that they probably are the ones that got his, like, interest in science fiction movies and stuff.
Mm, yeah.
And his father is killed by a drunk driver. So he gets this money from a settlement or insurance or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to use it to make a movie. Because he always wanted to make a movie. So he makes a movie. Somewhere around that time, within just, I feel like it was just very soon within that time, his brother stole $129,000 from him and right. disappeared with the mother. So that alone is messed up and traumatic.
Right. Now, do you think it was like the mother and the brother think that he's too crazy, so they just had to, like, let's just ditch him and be, you know, never talk to him again?
Maybe.
Because he's not, like, crazy enough to be, like, dangerous. He's just crazy enough to be annoying.
But here's what, and I don't think they get into it, but here's what I wonder. I wonder if the money was fairly split.
Right.
In the father's will. Or if the father left a disproportionate amount of money wanting to go to Christo because they seem to get along so well. And the other two were jealous of that. Because there's definitely a weird family dynamic there. If Christo and his dad get along so well. But the brother and the mom just leave and disappear.
Yeah.
Now, the mom does say at some point that the brother's not with them, but they clearly left together. Because he does read the last letter from the mother. And it's so rough, and she just disowns him and calls his... hang on. Let me back up.
Yeah, I don't quite remember that.
The mom and the brother disappear with the money. And Janelle, his fiance, is diagnosed with cancer.
Right.
But because his family took the money, he is unable to get her the surgery that she needs that might help her. But he's willing to do whatever, but he wants to get her the surgery that might help her. And he can't afford it because the family stole $129,000.
Right.
And the last... I have here that it says the last convo from the mother is when he is asking her for the money, she just says, I don't think that'll be appropriate, and then calls the cops on him. Because he's going to them, as I recall, saying, I don't want this money to make a movie. I don't want this money to do it. I'm just trying to get the money back from you so that I can pay for her
medical
surgery.
Stuff. Yeah.
I just want to pay for her surgery. And then the last conversation with that was that, but their final letter is the mother writes to him and says, you must be mistaken, whatever the brother's name was, isn't with me. She then disowns Christo, and she calls his dying girlfriend a cow.
That's rude.
Yeah. So, that's kind of the draw of this movie, I guess you could say, is the story of this guy that seems to have actually found a way to be okay with everything that has happened. I mean, he's found a weird thing to put his energy into, but he has his energy and focus into something.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I somehow think that the brother didn't steal the money.
Oh, interesting.
Like, I feel like, at some point, maybe he did rip him off in some way. He was supposed to give him money or something. I'm not sure. But I feel like the brother and the mom are bad, probably bad people, and just don't let him have any like sort of leash with his craziness. So they just were like, let's, like, maybe they're like very like straight laced, like people. You're like, this dude does drugs. He hangs out with Hollywood people, and they just take off. But I don't, I for some reason, I don't believe that there was like some kind of fraud or something like that that happened.
The thing that I questioned was the amount of money. $129,000 seems like a weird number to say.
Yeah, but that's life insurance. Maybe you got hit by a fucking Walmart truck.
Well, no, but here's the thing. Somebody close to me dies and leaves me $129,000. It's probably not $129,000. Exactly. You know, like, right. Who's going to steal $129,000 exactly?
Right.
So I'm thinking it was like a hundred, like, let's just say if it was $128,500.
Okay.
What number would you say when retelling the story years later?
I'd probably say like 130.
Exactly. Even if they stole $129,000 from you, what number would you say?
I'd still probably say 130.
$130,000, yeah. Because it's not going to be exact, but it's such a strange number. But then again, he is a strange dude, but it's just weird that he would say, they stole $129,000 from me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that is weird. I'm wondering if that makes it more believable.
To me, it makes it less believable.
But why would he make up that number? Why wouldn't he make up a round number?
Because, I don't know, just because he's a weird dude. I think because he wants to seem believable.
Oh, it's a double switch.
Yeah. Now here's the thing. I the amount and his choosing of the number seems weird, and that's why I'm not sure about the amount. But I think his family stealing his money totally would make sense. And like, I also kind of question maybe how close he was to his father, and like certain things I kind of question, but.
Yeah, like I said, again, the documentary is like half his, so.
It seems weird that he would make up a story, though, where his family disowns him. You know what I mean?
Oh, I definitely think they disowned him, unless he chopped them up.
Yeah. But you're thinking some of that is thinking,
my guess is, the dad was going to die or something. Well, they didn't know that. But so both the kids' names are on the bank account. When he dies, the check goes in there. This guy sucks at banks, so the other brother goes in and withdraws the money.
Yeah.
I don't think it was like a fraud deal. I think it was just like a jerk deal.
Yeah.
And they were just like, he's going to waste it on this shitty movie. Let's just take it for ourselves.
Wait, who said fraud?
Well, like, he says that he stole it from him.
Which he did. Like, if the money was supposed to go to both of them, then they basically stole the money from him.
But that's if it's supposed to go to both of them. If it just is going into an account that they're both their names are on.
Well, then the idea is that they're both supposed to get money from it.
That's the idea, but it's not like, that's just, it's up to whoever is the one that doles it out.
Whoever gets there first.
Well, that, or maybe the other brother maybe the court has to appoint, if they didn't have a will, like who the executor is. You're not going to pick the UFO guy. And then the other guy doles it out the way that he wants to dole it out.
Yeah. I mean, I guess. But still, it's like,
we're focusing on this portion and not the UFOs at all.
Well, but this is like the interesting thing about the
movie. This is like the part that's not just him videotaping dots.
Because the first part of it is him being like, oh my God, it's a UFO. Dennis, you are going to see some shit. Dennis. And then Dennis is like, what? And he's just like, just film it. Film it on your phone. I have a flip phone. Damn it, Dennis. Get an iPhone. The Apple Store's closed. All right, do it tomorrow.
He's just always yelling.
Yeah, just look at this.
And but you know the funny thing is he does talk to people and he's like he does get a couple people because he's like, can I film you? And I like how they put it in the thing.
Yes, I those are my favorite scenes when he's speaking with it like the I'm gonna call them Mexican people, so I hope they are. Like these two Mexican people about dots that were in this area, and that the, he does ask them if he can film, and they're like yes, yeah. And they're like, have you ever seen these before? And they tell their own little dumb story about UFOs.
Yeah, I
like those moments. I would have liked the movie to be more just him walking around asking people about UFOs.
And he's like, can I put you in my documentary? And they're just like, yeah, okay. And he's like, all right, thanks.
Sweet.
Keep looking at the skies.
Have a blessed day. This is a hot spot.
Hot spot. Hot spot for aliens. I mean, he's a... To me, the draw of the... documentary was more like his actual personal story, and like you're just like, what happened to this guy that made him like this? Because he says that he was first contacted when he was 8 when Bullwinkle bit him on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
And then he woke up to his parents screaming because his younger brother in the room had smeared all the soiled
dirty diapers. Yeah,
soiled, I think they say. Soiled, mm-hmm. Which is such a good like way to describe it. Soiled diapers. Onto the window to block something out. Which just makes you go like, what happened?
The dad was sexually abusing them.
That was actually something I was going to bring up in a minute. But yeah. The dad or the mom.
It could be.
Was up to something no good.
Making trouble in that neighborhood.
Yeah, it's okay. Let's stay away from that though.
Woke up in the night. Okay.
that's a pretty heavy.
It could have been good if we would have went. Woke up in the night and we both got scared. And Bullwinkle said, "Oh, come over here," or whatever he sounds like, you know.
I was just saying, though, I think we might have just found our connection between the two movies. Jan and Bullwinkle.
Oh, wow, that's conjecture.
Bullwinkle definitely bit an 8-year-old on the nose. And Jan pled guilty to child pornography, so...
So kids are getting hurt.
Yeah, kids are getting hurt in both these movies.
Okay, well, that's not going to get any viewers.
You mean
don't put that in the tagline.
Yeah, no. In which the connection is... I did make an earlier note for this movie where I was like, I hope part of this movie is people explaining what he is actually seeing. But they offer none of that.
Well, it's his movie. Why would he? He knows what they are.
Yeah, there's no guy that's like, wait a minute here. I think it's... A weather balloon. And he's like,
is that a Bullwinkle voice you're doing?
No, it wasn't meant to be. But I was about to be like, wait a minute, Bullwinkle, what are you doing here? Oh, nothing. And every time I think of Bullwinkle now, I think of you remember the movie with like the live action movie they did with Jason
Alexander? Oh, yeah.
Alexander, and I forget who the Russian female was.
I don't know. Isn't Fearless Leader is Robert De Niro, isn't it?
I think you might be right.
And the girl is like this real hot chick. But I don't know. She's in Coyote Ugly, I think.
I always think of the this part where they're just like, Bullwinkle, let me be Frank. And he's like, okay, I'll be Bullwinkle. I'm like, oh, God.
That's a good joke.
Yeah, that is good. Rocky and Bullwinkle movie. It's somebody. Like, the woman is definitely a name, I want to say.
This whole time I've been trying to figure out how I can do a Rocky voice, and I can't quite get it.
Rene Russo is the... I think. Let me see. I'm like... Yeah, Rene Russo is Natasha. And Fearless Leader is Robert De Niro. Piper Parabow is in it, though.
Yeah, from Coyote Ugly. She's in the Prestige magic movie. There you go.
Boom. Wait, no, I don't think that works. Does that work?
It's pretty far.
All right, we'll count it. Randy Quaid's in it, too. And Keenan Thompson. And Kel Mitchell.
I think I remember that.
Anyway. Oh, shit. The film features an ensemble cast of guest appearances by performers including Padgett Brewster, Janine Garofalo, John Goodman, David Alan Greer, Don Novello. I don't know who that is. John Polito, Carl Reiner, Whoopi Goldberg, and Jonathan Winters.
So Jonathan Winters is hilarious.
So is Piper Barrow.
Yeah, it's all good to me. That's a great cast. Budget, so that's a great movie. Go see that.
Budget of $76 million. It made box office $35.1 million.
Ooh, that's yeah. That's why you don't waste your money on the cast and you waste it on the writers.
Yeah. Bullwinkle, let me be frank. Oh, yeah, I'll be Bullwinkle. That's a pretty good joke.
I mean, that's straight out of Airplane. That's like...
That's the only joke I remember. And I remember being a kid watching this. And by kid, it came out in 2000, so I was not a kid.
Less of a child then, yeah.
Yeah, but I just remember being like, that's a good joke. That's a really good joke. And I kept being like... I can't wait to use that, and I've never gotten a chance to use it because no one ever says, let me be frank.
I really hope that you do get to use it.
I'm really hoping one day somebody will be like, let me be frank. I'll be like, okay, I'll be Keith. And they're just like, what? I'm like, oh, shit, it didn't work. Every once in a while, I do drop in the, when somebody says, I don't know, I say third base. Doesn't always work.
Some people, I respect it, though.
Yeah, some people are just like, what? It's like third base. Nope. Yep. Okay. All right.
Once in a while, I will watch that little bit, and it's one of the best things that's ever been written by humans.
It is genius.
It's absolutely a masterpiece.
I probably watch at least once a month. I watch that.
That's a little bit more than me, but I'm right there with you. I might step up my game.
And I'm just like, it is so amazing. Who's on first?
But what's so funny is you, at a certain point, you learn the joke while being told it. So, like, you get to be just as frustrated as the guy explaining who's on first.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. And what I like, too, is if you look on YouTube for who's on first, you can find different versions of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you find different versions, and it's the same bit, basically, but it's done... slightly differently, and no matter how they do it, it's funny.
I was gonna say, is there one that's better than another? Because I really think I only probably watched the classic.
It's always them doing it, but there's a couple different videos of them doing it.
Okay. I thought you meant like it'd be like Keenan Thompson and.
There's other, you can find other people doing it and stuff like that, and that's usually pretty funny too. But the way they do it, it's always funny, but they'll do it as a different setup each time and stuff. There's kind of the classic one, where they're going, so Abbott, you're going to be the manager of this baseball team, and you're going to take me to introduce me to the players, and I'm real excited. And I want to know when I meet the players, I want to know their names. So I'm not so nervous when I meet them.
Mm-hmm.
So he tells them their names and then it turns into all of that. There's another one that's a set that's a little bit different. Whose setup is, I guess they seem to be doing it at like a retirement home.
Okay. I've never seen that. I don't think.
And that starts off with them kind of coming out to do something for the people, and it's clearly set up. But they're just like, you know, I thought we'd do a little bit for the retirees here. Because I guess it's supposed to be an old folks home or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's like, well, you know, I thought we'd do something a little for them. I don't know. What do you guys want to hear? Maybe something a little different. And everyone's like, who's on first? And he's like, no. You guys don't want to hear that. And they're like, yeah, we do. And then they bring up like a bat and a hat for them. And they're like, yeah. Hey, you guys come prepared, huh? And then they do the bit, but then the bit is Costello is trying to join that team. So when he joins the team, he wants to know the players and stuff like that. And those, they're a little bit different. And if you hear the two, there's a little bit of a different, different cues in them. I had always heard the classic one, and then I found this one, and some of it is a little bit different, and they give each other different cues, but they're kind of able to pick them up in a little bit different way and stuff like that.
That's pretty fun.
So I feel like there's got to be a bunch of different ways that they've like done it. And I feel like it was one of those things, like every time they did it a little bit different.
Yeah.
Just for fun, because they were like, okay, we're going to do this. And you want to meet the players on the team, so you want to hear their names. And I go through, and then, like, somewhere in the middle of when we're discussing second base, we're going to bring this up, and somewhere in the... And then, you know, they just riff back and forth and stuff like that. Like, a lot of 2,000-year-old man. Have you heard that?
I don't think so.
2,000-year-old man is a genius comedy bit done by Carl Reiner and Albert Brooks.
I was just going to say
not Albert Brooks, Mel Brooks.
What I was just going to say is this bit that you're doing right now, part of the show, reminds me of the documentary Funny Jews, or When Jews Were Funny.
Yeah.
Because this is like the same thing where they're just explaining their favorite jokes.
There's a really good, and they did it a few times. Some of it, they had a basic idea of whether they're going to do Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks. But Carl Reiner was an interviewer, and Mel Brooks was the 2,000-year-old man.
Okay. I know the idea of this, but I can't think of it.
They had just found a 2,000-year-old man. So he's interviewing him about things. And he's like, well, what did you speak at the beginning? He's like, we spoke basic rock. Yeah, rock. Rock. It's like, rock's the language? Yeah, rock's the language. I'm trying to think of another good thing from it. But I'll try to find a little clip and drop in here or something. We can do that. But basically, they had a kind of a premise, but Carl Reiner would ask him a question, and then Mel Brooks would answer, and Carl Reiner would then ask him a follow-up question based on what he just said.
Yeah.
And, like, narrow him down and try and dig him into a deeper and deeper hole to see how well he could, like, get himself out of. Because they didn't really have a script. It was more of an improv thing, and he was just trying to get himself out of these corners that he would put him into.
That's super funny.
But it was, it was just like, what was it like back in those days? And, you know, things like that. And it was just trying to get him down into the... So I imagine that the Abbott and Costello, when doing Who's On First, was almost kind of like that.
Why are we talking about this?
I forget exactly. We were talking about Who's On First somehow. And here, let me just play this real quick, and then we'll...
Well, everything has changed for the better.
Let's skip ahead.
You want to see my driver's license?
No, we have no clinic. The Mayo Clinic has checked you out and said that you are 2,000. Sir, what has kept you alive for 2,000 years?
When I'll go in an airplane, if I'll go in an airplane, I'll never sit in the first two seats or the last two seats from an airplane.
Not sitting in the first two or the last two seats
and the last two
has kept you alive? I don't understand that. Why?
Because if the plane, unfortunately, should take a flop out from the sky, you're going to go down with it and break your foot.
Yes, but if the plane, as you say, flops out of the sky, everybody in all the seats will break their feet. I mean, at least.
Yeah, let me amend that. Any seat is no good.
In other words, you're afraid to fly in an airplane.
On the nosy.
That's funny.
Yeah. See, so that kind of gives an idea. Like, he just kept pushing them and pushing them, and he was just like, So it was that kind of back and forth. So yeah, how do we get on? Who's on first? We were talking about Rock and Bullwinkle. I think was actually how we got to that.
Maybe the writers spend money on writing. Frank.
Yeah, because Bullwinkle came and bit him on the nose, and it was a weird kind of thing as a child, and we thought that might be the connection to the two movies. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. That was a very long tangent.
What time? I didn't look. We're getting right about the time where we get to off topic.
I got one other very off topic thing for this movie, Curse of the Man Who Sees UFOs, in case you're just tuning in.
Okay, I have one more thing too, so I'm curious of yours.
To forward ahead. My thing has nothing to do about the movie itself. The opening for Virgil Films reminds me of West Wing and Toby, because it's the sound of the ball bouncing.
Okay.
Did you catch that?
No, but that's a very strange connection for you.
Dunk, 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 kind of.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I thought of West Wing and Toby bouncing the ball.
Oh my God. I think I'm still on season 5. It's just not good. It's just not as good.
Yeah.
Have you watched it?
A long time ago. I have not watched it in many, many years.
Okay, because I know you said that you didn't really watch season 5 that much or whatever.
I've rewatched 1 through 3 a ton of times and a bit of 4.
4 is still good. 4 is not.
I probably haven't gotten, because when I start to watch it, I probably watched like 1 through 3, and then it kind of dies down a little bit at some point in 3 for me, and I won't necessarily always watch through 4. And then at some point I'll just jump back and be like, I want to watch 1 again, or I want to watch, like, I'll jump it in the middle and be like, I want to watch 2 Cathedrals episode. And
that's cool. Yeah, you have the hands. Yeah. But whenever they – that's awesome. But 4 is still good, but you can tell that there's a storm brewing, that it's about to be different.
Yeah.
And I don't like it, and I just – I don't cry enough.
Yeah.
But that's a whole nother documentary.
That's a different podcast. What is your last thing on the man who cursed to see UFOs? Cursed the man who sees UFOs.
I don't know. I don't want to quote him and be wrong, but he does say that his dog is the dog from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he does. He does say that.
It's not.
That's your thing?
The dog that's in Pirates of the Caribbean is named Twister and Chopper, are the dogs that have done it. He may have been a dog in it, but I can't remember if he says he's the dog from like the jail cell scene or like the main dog, but he's not that dog. And it was just a weird thing that he said. And I couldn't tell if it was a joke or if it was like, maybe he's another dog. Maybe there are more dogs on set.
I think it might be a joke.
I just thought it was a weird thing.
Okay.
It was just
I think it was supposed to be a joke.
Well, then it wasn't funny.
Okay. Well, you're not funny then.
Because he messed up a joke?
Yeah, I don't know.
But that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't write it down, but I do remember being like, that's not right. There's no way that's right.
It's not right. If it's the dog I'm thinking of, if it's the real, the one that you would say, the dog from Pirates of the Caribbean... It's not that dog.
He just looks like the dog, right?
He doesn't.
He doesn't look like the dog?
No, it's a different style of dog.
Oh, I thought it looked like the dog at least.
I mean, it's like a scraggly haired dog, but it's a different dog.
All right, so basically what we're saying is we can't trust anything that he says in this movie.
It made me go, all right, let's watch this guy.
Things that make you go, hmm?
Exactly.
Okay. Would you recommend watching either of these documentaries to an individual?
Again, if you're me, yeah. I'd probably turn these on at night if I'm like really looking for something that I want to watch, something new, haven't seen before. Sure, I would watch these. Someone that's not me probably won't enjoy these that much.
Okay.
I think on IMDb, Curse of the Man Who Sees UFOs got a 7.4.
Ooh, that's high. That seems high.
It's not bad. And Magician's got a 6.2. And I'd kind of stand by this.
I feel like Magician's is spot on. Curse of the Man Who Sees UFOs should be closer to Magician's.
Oh, okay. You're saying more of a 7, high 6?
I'm thinking high 6. High 6.
Okay. I'd agree with those.
They're not,
I think,
bad.
Which one did you like more?
Probably Curse of the Man Who Sees UFOs.
See, I probably, even though I rated that higher, I think I liked the magic one more just because I liked the magic.
Okay. Well, I might be biased right now because of Jan. Because I'm still crushed by the news.
Yeah, that is something you have to take into consideration.
Yeah. What is your pick for next time?
I picked a movie that is... I think this could go. I don't think... I'm not going to submit it for review for Hall of Fame.
Okay.
But I think that it could find its way into the Hall of Fame. And okay. I feel like I've been picking some lower quality movies recently. And I want to pick something that I know is a heavy hitter. I've seen before. I actually just recently watched it. It's Metallica : Some Kind of Monster.
Ooh.
You ever see it?
No.
Wow. I'm surprised. It's... I mean, it's a pretty... It's a pretty well-known documentary, I think.
Metallica, what's it called? Metallica?
Some Kind of Monster. It's from 2004. It's on Netflix.
Is it like a music documentary?
It's more of a behind the scenes of them making the album. There's definitely a lot of music in it.
See, I don't like Metallica.
That's why I'm... It's not why I'm picking this, but it's a question that I'm sure I will have for you at when we talk about it. Because I don't think it's like a thing where if you like this style of music, it's easier to like the documentary, but I don't know if it's necessary.
Okay.
And that's my question, I guess.
Okay. I couldn't decide which one to go with. I was like, do I want to learn something? Do I want to not learn something? I don't know. I'm going to go with All Work, All Play.
Never heard of it.
It's also on Netflix. It is basically about the lives of professional gamers.
Okay.
Because I'm thinking that might be something I want to get into. Make a little extra money.
Like, are you talking about like playing on Twitch or doing professional gaming?
Like professional gaming, like tournaments and stuff.
You have to be really good.
Yeah, I think I can get really good. I just have to quit my job.
Okay. I mean, can I... Like, are you going to film it?
Maybe.
Can I be on your team until you surpass me?
Okay. I mean, I guess maybe. I mean, I'll probably surpass you right away, but... You
know. God damn it. Okay.
I mean, you know, it's pretty hard to surpass what you're already ahead of.
You're going to lap me. What game would you play?
You know, it's hard to choose. There's so many great ones out there. Probably Call of Duty.
Okay. Now, you're talking about console gaming, not PC gaming.
I don't know.
I feel like this movie is going to be heavy into the PC gaming.
It probably is. It probably is.
So your first investment is going to have to be a $2,000 computer.
Right.
I will definitely...
Let's just watch the movie and then figure out what I need to invest in.
I definitely want to videotape your spiral into this nonsense.
No, it's always been something I've been like, ever since I found out that people get paid for it, I've always been like, how do I do that?
Oh, it's wicked awesome. But I, for you, because of I know who you are and what you sound like on microphones and stuff, I think that you should go down the Twitch route of gaming to be paid.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? I think it more of a podcast while gaming would be a good sweet spot for you.
That, you know, you're probably right about that. That's probably a way that I should go. I should look into that. I'm going to write that down. Twitch.
Oh, yeah. You got a Twitch, my man.
I should definitely look into that.
And you can do it straight from your PlayStation. Like, you could do it today.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Like, you ever see on your controller the share button?
Yeah.
Well, that.
Oh, I just do that?
Yeah. You just have to set up a Twitch account. You can do it through YouTube, Twitch. Twitch is just a big one. But yeah, that's a huge market. I mean, the one way that you could definitely improve your ability to make money from it is be a attractive girl. But still, you have a shot.
I do have a shot then, yeah. I saw something's still coming of it. So that's good.
That's good. Metallica documentary is 2 hours and 20 minutes, according to IMDb.
Holy shit.
I thought when I watched it, it was closer to 2 hours, but...
that is long. That is a commitment.
Yeah. I like I said, I really like this movie. On IMDb, it only has a 7.5 rating, which I expected a lot more, but, I'm curious to what you think about it.
Okay.
because I think it is a really well-made documentary, and we'll talk about it on the episode that we actually talk about it. But I really do like it.
I give you a hard time. I just looked up. Apparently, All Work, All Play is 2.5 hours also. So,
oh, for real?
Yeah.
Well, there's the connection.
All right. I think that's the end of an episode.
That's yeah, probably.
Okay. This has been the documentary show. I have been Keith Bodalo.
And I'm still John Oldfield.
Follow us on all that stuff that we mentioned at the beginning. Our Instagram, which is the new hip happen in place, at Doc Show Pod. And leave us a review on iTunes. And thank you for listening.
Again.